Hello and welcome to Savor, a production of iHeartRadio and Stuff Media. I'm Annie Reese.
And I'm Lauren Vogelbaum. And today, we're talking about salad.
And I'm very excited to talk about salad. I don't know why you said it like that. There should be confetti cannons going off.
Do you still have those confetti cannons?
I do.
Okay, well, perfect.
I have multiple confetti cannons that I discovered when I moved desk. And our office manager looked at me and was like, oh, and I just kind of shrugged. You know?
Yeah. Just sometimes you have confetti cannons at your desk.
You never know.
And sometimes you have salads at your desk.
I do. It's actually a running joke.
Oh, yeah?
Ramsey and Paul have made, you might have heard them, they make jokes about my salad eating habit in a good-natured way.
Uh-huh.
I have salad probably every day.
Wow. Oof. Oh, man.
I had salad today. I had it yesterday. I'll have it tomorrow.
I had some today, but because, like, we had catered lunch and there was, like, salad stuff there, so I kind of made my own.
That's a very exciting salad.
Oh, man. And also, like, I was having a crunchy salad craving so hard from doing this research. You wouldn't think that. I don't know. I do crave, like, the crunch of salads.
I mean, there's a good salad is phenomenal.
So good.
I've had many sad salads.
Oh, yes.
And those are very sad.
Yes. One of my favorite things that we ate while we were in Hawaii was a salad from Piggy Smalls. It was a really heckin' good salad.
That was a good salad. Very crunchy.
Yeah.
I just did I've loved salads for like ever. When I was in elementary school, middle school, I made salads. I brought them to school. And over on Stuff I Never Told You, the other show I do, we just did an episode on salads. And particularly sad sexist salads. Like, why is it that when you search women, one of the first images that comes up is a woman?
Yeah, pictures of these nice model ladies who are alone.
Yep.
And they have a salad.
Uh-huh.
And they are laughing as though it is the best experience they have ever had.
They are having the time of their lives.
Eating that salad.
Yes.
By themselves.
Yes.
Women laughing alone with salad. Yeah.
Yes. And that is a thing that you can look up. It's kind of like, you know, just a collection of pictures. And it's when you see them all together.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. You don't realize how pervasive of a stock image it is until you go like, oh.
Yeah, and I accidentally took one of these pictures because I had a salad and somebody told me a joke and I was on the beach and then somebody else just took a picture right at the perfect moment and
wow.
It looks like one of these pictures. It wasn't the salad. And then, you know, what you didn't see is I almost choked to death after that because the leaves from the laughing.
Yeah, it's dangerous.
It is dangerous. salads do have a bit of a, not a great reputation, I suppose.
Yeah. I almost feel like I need to, I almost felt a minute ago like I needed to apologize for saying that I crave salad.
Yeah.
Because it's not like a cool thing.
Right.
Or it classically hasn't been.
And when I eat one, and we'll go into this in a little bit, I feel like there is a judgment of, oh, look at that lady eating salad. She's worried about her figure.
Right.
But this is like in our pop culture as well, because again, with the Seinfeld references, there's an episode when Jerry orders, quote, just a salad, and his date and the waiter react like he is a monster. And it like keeps him up at night. He hears himself ordering just a salad.
Just a salad.
Just a salad. And the just says a lot.
Right.
Right.
I'm not going to have a meal.
Just a salad.
Just a salad.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yep, and then there's the Homer Simpson quote, you don't win friends with salad.
Lisa, you don't win friends with salad. And then Bart starts the little conga line, you don't win friends with salad. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Marge Thank
gets
you.
On it. Anytime. Anytime.
I always knew I could count on you. And then right before we did this, we went on a very ill-timed mini rabbit hole of salad fingers.
Which, if you do not recall, was a mid-2000s pop culture flash animation YouTube phenomenon. Very upsetting. Just weird, dark comedy and creepy and, yeah, bad mindset to go into for, I kind of had to, we'd been talking about Mr. Rogers before that, for heck's sake. I don't know how we, anyway. Salad fingers, look it up at your own risk. Parents advisory warning for your children.
I remember sitting in my college dorm and we were all grouped around the computer just watching that. I think we all wanted to leave, but we couldn't. You're riveted, and you don't know why.
Yeah.
Anyway, there's a lot going on with the salad. So
yeah.
We should get in to the episode and to our question.
Yes.
Salads. What are they?
Well, okay. Salad can mean a lot of things, but what we're talking about here today mainly are green salads, dishes composed with a base of raw leafy greens, usually dressed with some kind of liquid flavoring mix. And then any number of additional vegetables and or proteins, which themselves may be raw or cooked.
Yes. Uh-huh. And there are a million types of salads, some of which we'll go on mini deep dives on. Can mm-hmm. we go on a mini deep dive? We'll talk about a little more in depth. And there's definitely some confusion around what is a salad. Mm-hmm. Jello salads, potato salads, pasta salads. One of the very first emails we got back when we were Food Stuff was someone asking, what the heck is a salad anyway? And I was like, oh, I don't know. Thanks for listening.
It's a mix of stuff.
It is. And yeah, there are specific types of salads with fun origin stories like the Cobb, the Caesar, the Niçoise, Greek. So it's a lot.
It is. But yes, this episode mostly leafy
green
salads.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. And by themselves, nutritionally speaking, leafy greens are indeed good for you. Lots of calcium, a smattering of other minerals, vitamins A and C, lots of water and fiber fill you up real good, although they are best when they're paired with some proteins and fats to kind of round them out. Yeah. And the greener, the better, by the way. Iceberg lettuce has less than a third of some nutrients than leaf lettuce contains.
Oh, yes. And we'll talk about it very briefly, but iceberg lettuce is very divisive.
It is.
And I have a friend who, every time she sees me eating it, goes on a crusade about how it's, like, not worth the nutrients and why are you wasting your time eating that? Like, okay, well.
It's crunchy.
It can be good.
Yeah.
A good wedge salad?
A good wedge salad. Oh, man. But speaking of a good wedge salad,
yes.
Which is usually drenched in blue cheese and ranch and whatever. Okay, so yes, the nutrition of salads, oh, gosh, it can vary so widely.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think we've talked on the show before about, like, the day we each realized separately how high-calorie and high-fat salad dressings can be and
yep.
how, like, world-shattering it was.
Mm-hmm.
Paradigm shifting. Yeah, for me, it was when I looked up the nutrition info about a McDonald's salad and realized it had more fat than a burger.
Wow.
Like, way less good for you.
Wow.
In that term.
Right.
Than a burger.
Mm-hmm.
And manufacturers are getting more savvy about that as consumer and government interest in reducing bad fats has been on an upswing for the past couple decades. McDonald's has since revamped their salads and uses lighter dressings. But there, as everywhere, I mean, you know, just use common sense. Like, if a salad has fried chicken or bacon or a ton of cheese or a hydrogenated oil-based dressing or a really highly sugar-based dressing on top of it, that makes a difference.
Yeah.
And I know that sounds kind of like duh, but like a thing that I have definitely had to do in these are modern times of processed convenience foods and eating out is to try to really think about how I think about foods.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Like if I want a piece of fried chicken on a salad, that's okay. Just like think of it as fried chicken with some salad.
Right.
You know, and the dressing could have as much sugar as a bread bun.
It definitely could.
Because of salad's reputation as a health food, a lot of marketing goes into positioning salads as healthier choices than other menu items. And sometimes they just aren't. And for your money and dietary wants and needs, you could be making a better choice. More on that later. I'll get off the soapbox now.
It's an important soapbox.
It is. Oh, marketing. And a note about the potential danger of salads.
Yeah.
Salad danger.
Yeah.
Because green salads are served with at least some raw vegetables, they're more of a food safety concern than cooked foods because cooking tends to kill most of the germs that would make you sick. And salad greens are often sold pre-cut and washed, which is sometimes effective, but sometimes just adds more opportunities for the introduction of infectious microbes. From 1998 to 2008, the CDC found that leafy vegetables caused the most foodborne illnesses in the United States. Not the most deaths. That was contaminated poultry. But that doesn't mean don't eat salads. Just maybe take the extra time to chop your own salads to be on the safe side. Or if you cannot quit bagged salads, make sure that you keep them chilled and eat them as far away from the use-by date as possible, soon as possible. Yeah. And maybe be a little bit picky about where you eat your salads. Like, if you don't trust a restaurant's kitchen, like, you know, order something that sees some heat.
I feel like when I buy salad at a grocery store these days, people look at me askew. Like, does she know? She's risking her health. Like,
Well, there was that recent E. coli outbreak, so.
I know, and I still continue. So maybe they're right to look at me askew. I don't know.
Or it's just that sexism thing. They're like, oh, that lady with her salad.
Maybe. It could be multiple things. It could be a cross-section of many judgments happening.
Sure.
That's why I don't like going to the grocery store.
Or they're just looking, and you happen to
also
be there.
Also possibly true.
Yeah.
The spotlight effect. Like, don't you judge me. And they're like, who are you? I'm trying to get over there.
They're like, I'm thinking about raisins. Yeah.
And then I judge them. No, I don't mind raisins. But I know not a lot of people don't like them.
Oh, I'm neutral. I'm raisin neutral. Also, regarding the health of salads, raw vegetable can be harder to digest than cooked vegetables, which can lead to some gassiness. Mm-hmm. So if you're starting to incorporate more salads into your diet and you find this happening, try limiting the raw vegetable involved to like 10 to 25% of your daily dietary intake, like a cup and a half to 2 cups of salad, like 12 to 16 ounces.
This is really interesting because we recently talked about on our lobster episode how lobster is a terrible date food.
Yeah.
Yeah. And over on Sminty, we were talking about how like the stereotype is on a date, the dude orders a steak, the woman orders a salad. Mm-hmm. And a lot of my friends had told me they do that because they won't get bloated. And then when I said that on the show, the co-host was like, what?
What?
So interesting.
Huh.
Stuff to think on.
Mm-hmm.
Other things to think on. Numbers.
Salad numbers.
Yes. According to one report published in 2014, the salad restaurant industry was pulling in about $300 million a year. And a lot of other numbers show that the industry is experiencing a lot of growth.
Mm-hmm.
However, salads are not universally popular. Perhaps that goes without saying. McDonald's told their investors that salads only make up 2 to 3% of their sales and advised franchises not to spend too much advertising on salads.
Huh.
Yep.
Popular chain Sweetgreen says that 40% of their orders come through their app.
Wow. They have a specific app?
They have a specific app. I know.
That blows my mind. I know people who have apps for like, I'm a person of few apps, so it blows my mind somebody would have this app.
The specific app. Oh, yeah. People go there, like, every day.
Wow.
I mean, like, the same person. Like, of course people go to that restaurant.
Every day.
Every day. There's
I
a
got
lot
you.
Of branches.
Mm-hmm.
Here in the United States, May is National Salad Month.
Ooh. Mm-hmm. Grocery store bagged salads account for about $3 billion.
As of 2015, about 83% of U.S. households reported buying bagged salads regularly.
Hmm. And there are all kinds of salad specialty shops with a variety of pun names. Lettuce Surprise You comes to mind. I feel like you've spoken about that one before.
I don't approve.
Lauren is shaking her head. Salad bars at restaurants, some of them with a hilarious spread of toppings mm-hmm. that make me go, this is a dinner now. Let me get some chicken and steak, but thank you. But this is
this is no longer just a salad.
This is ridiculous.
The average American ate 22.1 pounds of leafy greens in 2014.
Hmm. And then there's this from Jim Gaffigan's book, Food, A Love Story. When someone orders a salad at lunch, it's presented as the decision of a martyr giving up their happiness to the waiter. I'll just have the salad. Again,
aww,
the just.
The just. I never feel like that when I order a salad.
No, I'm usually pretty excited. Sometimes, you know, if there's not a lot of options and it's the salad is like
sad.
Then yes. But generally, I'm very excited.
Yeah.
About my salads.
I don't know.
Well, what we do know is some salad history.
We do. And we also know that we have to first take a quick break for a word from our sponsor.
And we're back. Thank you, sponsor.
Yes, thank you.
It's hard to say when the first human ate the first salad.
Yes.
But ancient Romans were the ones who really made the salad popular, a thing that we know about. Uncooked leafy vegetables, oil, salt. If you remember from our episode on salt, the Latin word for salt is sal, and that's the basis of where the word salad comes from.
Yes, the Latin salata, meaning kind of salted things.
The scientific word for lettuce, lactuca, comes from the Latin word lac, meaning milk. And that's a reference to the milk-like juice that comes from cut lettuce.
Yeah. And, oh, man, we have got to do an episode on lettuce.
Yeah.
I had to stop myself from so many lettuce rabbit holes. Ooh,
hey.
That's kind of a thing.
Yeah.
Anyway, yeah. But green salads really are a European thing. Like, leafy greens were abundant in other cuisines around the world, but mostly cooked or pickled, or at least blanched. Like, in ancient China, uncooked greens were considered unsafe to eat. And no, Chinese chicken salad is not Chinese. It's from 1960s America.
So surprised.
No.
Aristotle wrote that it was better to eat vegetables before a meal. Hippocrates and Galen agreed, believing it helped with digestion. Others clapped back and said it should definitely be after. You should definitely have the vegetables after a meal.
Ah.
Many of those were chefs who believed the vinegar in a lot of salad dressings made wine taste awful.
Okay.
Still, others believed the dish would help you sleep and promoted eating it before bed. And the great salad debate begins.
Although, yeah, in ancient Rome, I think it was practiced to have, like, a salad before dinner. Mm-hmm. In order to stimulate digestion, and another after dinner to help you sleep. Two salad courses.
What?
I know.
I remember, I feel like this comes up a weird amount, but when I was in French class in high school, there was a section in our French book, our textbook, that said, here in America, we like to have our salads before the meal, but in France, they like to have them at the end, believing it helps in digestion. And it really stuck with me, and it was the whole thing of, like, are the French doing it better? Anyone from France, right? That's really the case. I've eaten in France. I just don't recall. I don't think I ever had a salad course.
No.
Huh. Well, anyway, write in.
Yeah,
answer
let
that
us know.
Question.
Sure.
Going back to that sleeping thing, wild lettuce of ye olden days did have chemical properties that might have actually put you down for the night. Physicians would recommend dried balls of that lettuce milk juice, which is kind of like latex, for insomnia in Europe and colonial America, and hospitals used it as sedative all the way up to World War II.
Huh. Wow. Yeah.
Oh, I would love to get into that one day. But here's something else I really want to talk about.
Yeah?
Lettuce was also viewed as a anti-aphrodisiac?
We've never had one of those before, have we?
No.
Wow.
Our first anti-aphrodisiac. I want like a trophy or something.
It's very exciting. Yeah, well, lettuce deserves a trophy for this for sure.
It does.
Oh, lettuce trophies. Mm-hmm. This may have been wrapped up in Greek mythology. Aphrodite's lover Adonis was killed in a bed of lettuce.
Oh, dear.
By a wild boar that was sent by someone. Sources disagree.
Ancient Greeks thought it might lead to impotence as well, and 1st century CE physician Dioscorides prescribed it for lonely enlisted soldiers who might be wrestling with what he called libidinous images.
Ah.
Eat some salad.
Eat some salad. Fix you right up.
The poet Virgil wrote about a salad with vinegar, cheese, and herbs.
And Pliny the Elder wrote about salads in Natural History, saying that back when people kept more home gardens, quote, the products of gardens were most approved, for they are always ready to use and speedily prepared. They require no fire, and therefore fuel is economized. Thence, they were called aceteria. They are easily served up. Besides, light they are of digestion, they breed no heaviness in the head, they offend not the brain, nor any of the senses.
They offend not the brain!
Yeah. That's a relatively colorful translation. I love it. and yeah, aceteria was the word for plants used in salads. And to this day, you might hear salad greens referred to as aceterious greens. It comes from the word for vinegar. So it meant something like plants that you would apply vinegar to.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. Also, some oregano-flavored olive oil, thought to be a salad dressing, was discovered on a shipwreck about 2,400 years old.
Wow.
Yeah. Huh. Shipwreck episode forthcoming.
Yes.
Oh. After the Roman Empire fell, European salad consumption fell with it. It wasn't until the Middle Ages that salads started to make a comeback, a mixture of vegetables, flowers, and herbs. As the Renaissance began, so did the salad experimentation.
Yeah, sometime between like the 14 and 1700s, I know that's a wide range.
Mm-hmm.
Mysteries history. A category of dishes called salmagundi came into fashion, chopped ingredients arranged artfully, sometimes over beds of greens. This would develop into French composed salads, which the Larousse Gastronomique lists three full pages of.
Woo!
Oh, and those then developed into the stuff like the American Chef's Salad and Cobb Salad.
Oh, yeah. yes. Mm-hmm.
It's said that a dean of St. Paul's Cathedral once said that a salad artistically prepared, quote, would tempt a dying anchronite to eat, anchronite being a religious hermit.
A religious hermit, okay. Mm-hmm. This was the time of the grand salad. Dozens of ingredients, arrangements, figs, potatoes, pickled oysters, raisins, crucifix peas. I didn't have time to look into it, but it was a list. It was on the list. In 1606, Shakespeare first used the phrase salad days.
Yes, my salad days when I was green in judgment. That's from Antony and Cleopatra. Cleo is talking about hooking up with Julius Caesar when she was young and perhaps a little bit silly.
Mm. Mm-hmm. In 1699, British author John Evelyn's Acetaria, A Discourse of Salets, what a title. I bet it was a real page-turner, came with this quote, "Salad is a particular composition of certain crude and fresh herbs, such as usually are, or may safely be eaten with some acetous juice, oil, salt, the mysterious, etc., to give them a grateful gust and a vehicle." And he wrote that salads were beneficial influences on morals, temperance, and chastity.
He listed 73 possible ingredients for salads.
Oh, mm-hmm. Wow. And this was not originally meant to be a book, but a chapter in a book Evelyn never completed. It was also meant to promote a vegetarian lifestyle.
Yeah, he was working on this kind of like encyclopedia of sorts. And he did write a lot about the benefits of eating raw greens and mostly vegetables. He said, people who to this day, living on herbs and roots, arrive to incredible age in constant health and vigor. And he did, to be fair, live to the age of 85.
Good for him, especially at that time, I would imagine.
Right?
And he believed that a good salad dresser needed a certain set of skills, mainly a know-how of how to mix oils and vinegars in good proportion.
Yeah, around this time, salads, especially made for the wealthy, would have been carefully balanced according to the humors, a person's supposed constitution of hot and cold, along with whatever was going on with the weather.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
This brings us to coleslaw. I guess worthy of a salad mention. I have never, ever thought of that as a salad, but when I was looking at a salad timeline, it's on there. It is, I guess, a cabbage salad first appeared in a Dutch cookbook in 1770. Towards the end of the 19th century, a temperance leader by the name of Dr. D.O. Lewis came out against salad dressings for being too sinfully tasty.
Dang.
Mm-hmm.
Watch out for those salad dressings.
Probably.
Not for moral reasons, though.
No,
gosh.
No. During the 19th century, salads were seen as a rich people's food.
Yeah, before refrigeration and fast transport entered the scene, and as industrialization was pushing more people into cities, salad greens were a thing that you would either eat because you lived in a place that grew them, like in your own farm or garden or otherwise quite local, or because you had a tremendous amount of money to spend on this super perishable product. Most people throughout history would have probably preserved most of their veg by pickling or eventually canning it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Then we get to the first fruit salad that we know of, fruit with whipped cream, in 1861. A couple of years later, the maitre d' at Waldorf Astoria came up with the recipe for the Waldorf salad, apple, mayo, celery, and walnut. I remember the first time I had that. It was when I was in college.
Huh.
What is this thing? I'll try it. Okay. Interesting. Sometime around 1863, either in a Rhode Island meat market or a Russian court, or neither, we get the first chicken salad.
Hmm.
Mm-hmm. In 1864, Andrew Kerwin's Host and Guest, a book about dinners, dinner giving, wines, and desserts, claimed that to be a salad dresser took a, quote, patient and discreet man, or a painstaking and careful man or woman.
Huh.
And at the time, usually they were also French.
Okay.
Yes. One of the most famous salad dressers was a French emigre, d'Aubignac. According to legend, he was eating alone at a London tavern when a neighboring table of well-to-do, well-familied men or something realized he was French, and they asked if he would do them the honor of dressing their salad. And he did so. And then the request for the so-called fashionable salad dresser come rolling in.
Huh.
Aristocracy all over wanted him to come dress their salads. He showed up at their door with a mahogany case of ingredients.
Wow.
Like caviar, truffles, soy, egg yolks, vinegars, and oils. He made a fortune doing this. He was able to retire doing this.
Wow. We apparently need to do an episode about salad dressers.
I would love to. I didn't know this was a thing, and I'm fascinated by it.
It's great.
Americans started to get into salads after the Civil War. And the first known recipe for ambrosia salad, which is a Southern holiday tradition, kind of like a fruit mixture thing, popped up in an 1867 book titled Dixie Cookery, or How I Managed My Table for 12 Years.
Yeah, yeah. Fruit and usually some kind of creamy element.
I would love to do an episode on ambrosia because I feel like for our family, it's, I think for most people it is. There's some kind of creamy thing. But for us, it's just like literally fruit soup. It's orange juice and pineapple juice and
fruit.
Oh,
right. Yeah. Huh. Anyway.
Anyway. In 1884, in Mrs. Lincoln's Boston Cookbook, What to Do and What Not to Do in Cooking, the author wrote about the dressing of salad. Quote, "Surely no lady who has a hand and knows how to use it deftly and gracefully would be willing to relinquish this most fascinating part of the dinner service."
Okay.
Very fascinating, I'm sure. Yeah. In Laura Shapiro's book, Perfection Salad, she talks about how salad had another resurgence in the 20th century when Americans and mainly women were really into home ec and intricate decorative foods that were typically associated with luxury and the rich, another way of showing off. They were also, these salads, coded as feminine. From Shapiro, quote, "Despite the often hefty ingredients that were assembled in its name, the salad course never lost its original image as a fragile, leafy interlude that was something of a nutritional frill. Salads were perceived as ladies' food, reflecting the image of frailty attached to the women who made them."
Huh.
Yeah. And there is some fascinating research out there that shows healthier food, or food that at least is perceived as healthier, because as we said, salads don't necessarily have to be healthier. These things are seen as feminine, and they are believed to taste worse in America anyway, not true in every country.
Yeah, yeah. I think in France,
it's reversed.
It's flipped.
Right. Ah. Recently, when given the same Entenmann's blueberry muffins, one with masculine packaging and the other with a feminine packaging claiming, like, healthier, a majority of participants reported the one with the masculine packaging as the better-tasting one.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, humans.
Yep. And then, of course, the pressure for women to be thin has frequently led them to choose salads as an acceptable thing for them to eat in public, despite the fear we all have of getting salad stuck in your teeth.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, I never feel like less of a human being, like less of a civilized human person than when I'm eating a salad.
Yes. Yeah. And like, I take issue with rabbit food, but I do feel like I can see it when I'm eating. I just feel like some kind of grazing creature.
Yeah.
But in a fun way.
Yeah.
And yeah, the thing is, salads for sure are not always healthy. Take the Crab Louis, the so-called king of salads. Crab meat, avocado, asparagus, tomatoes. Historians think this was a West Coast invention, possibly going back to 1904 and the Seattle Olympic Club, when a famous tenor ordered it repeatedly until it was all gone. Huh. Or maybe San Francisco in 1914. Or Washington State's Davenport Hotel claim their founder came up with it.
Yeah. And those ingredients on their own are just fine. There's a tendency starting around this time to add mayonnaise to anything that you called a salad.
Yes. Yes. And I think when I say not always healthy and give this example, it's that it's just, I think it's just fine food.
Sure. Yeah.
I think when we think of salad, we're putting it on a level
that's just like glowing, like angels choir.
Exactly.
Kind of. Mm-hmm. Right. This will perfect you.
Yes.
Kind of thing.
Yes. Sometime in the early 20th century, we see the invention of the tuna salad. In 1924, we get the Caesar from a Tijuana chef named Caesar Cardini, who moved to Mexico to avoid America's prohibition laws. Story goes, he was low on ingredients, so he tossed together some romaine, garlic, croutons, boiled eggs, Parmesan cheese, Worcestershire sauce, and olive oil. He insisted on absolutely no anchovies and only Italian olive oil.
Ah.
Yes. That's how the popular story goes. There's another that a chef at a restaurant in Chicago put it together two decades earlier. However, that claim is only supported by one source that I could find.
Ah.
And I will say most salad origin stories are this very thing. You're running out of ingredients or you need to use something up.
Yeah, you're like, oh, crap. All right, salad time.
And then there happens to be a celebrity there.
And they're like, this is the best food.
And then it goes on the menu. That's it. Thousand Island dressing comes along onto the scene in the early 20th century. In 1925, we get green goddess dressing, allegedly named after a star in the talkies, the talkie films.
Okay.
Yes, and then Cobb salad. Okay. A little more than a decade later, in 1937, along comes the Cobb salad. Okay. The legend goes, this was an accidental creation.
Uh-huh.
Yep. From a fellow at LA's The Brown Derby, Robert Cobb. Yes, Bob Cobb.
Bob Cobb.
Bob Cobb. He was looking around for ingredients for a late night meal. He stumbled upon some avocado, chopped it up, and added it to a mixture of watercress, romaine, tomatoes, boiled eggs, chicken, cheese, and of course, some leftover bacon. On the top went the Derby's beloved French dressing. And when a Hollywood promoter ate it and spread the word about how delicious it was, it went onto the menu permanently. And the rest is history. Then in 1939, a Chicago restaurant debuts the first recorded salad bar. Commercial production of iceberg lettuce began in the 1940s, bred specifically to survive transport across the U.S. Before the refrigerated rail car was introduced, lettuce was packed in ice. That's where the name comes from. So for most middle-class Americans in the mid-century, this was salad.
Mm-hmm.
Iceberg.
That's it.
That's it.
That's what you get.
And yes, I found a lot of strong opinions around the palatability of iceberg lettuce. Lots of detractors calling it the polyester of vegetables. And I'm not even entirely sure what that means, but I get that it's bad. But there were some defenders. An article in The New Yorker comes to mind. It suggested pickling it,
ooh,
which I think would be delicious.
Yeah, that sounds great.
Also, I've charred it. Wonderful.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Charred lettuce is so good.
Mm-hmm.
Huh. Around 1950, restaurants started introducing salad bars. Over the next couple decades, neighborhood delis caught on to that trend as well.
Ranch dressing comes out in 1954, and you can see our ranch episode, one of our longest episodes ever, featuring coworker Ben Bolin, for more on that one.
Mm-hmm.
And then, in the 1960s, we entered the beautiful, weird era of the Jell-O salad. While we see those as perhaps a bit tacky now, apologies to anyone who loves Jell-O salads. I think in general, they've fallen out except in one specific place in the U.S.
Yeah, yeah.
This was not always the case. It was a big signifier of wealth because you had a refrigerator?
Yeah, yeah.
However, the first Jell-O salad on record dates back to 1904, and a third-place contest winner, the Perfection Salad. This was a mold of cabbage, green pepper, celery, and pimentos. And you can see our aspics episode if you want more on that one.
Oh, yeah. Lots of early, early 20th century aspic action happening. Oh,
so much.
So fun.
And the Jell-O salad becomes Utah's state salad.
Mm-hmm. In the 1970s, pre-cut greens were introduced to the commercial market. Between the 1970s and the year 2000, the market for pre-cut greens grew to the point where 35 to 40% of the lettuce grown in California was packaged pre-cut.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Man.
Salad bars, particularly in steakhouses, really boomed in the 1980s, along with the burgeoning middle-class-focused chain restaurant scene. Just look at all those options. Behold the value!
So much value!
Many values were had that day.
Mm-hmm.
The 80s is also the decade that salad and soup-focused buffet chains started booming, like Soup Plantation.
Yep.
also known as Sweet Tomatoes. And you can see our episode on buffets for a little bit more on that.
I was recently at I haven't been to a place that has a salad bar in a long time. And mm-hmm. A couple days ago I went. And it does have a feeling of like, and I don't mean any offense by this, but this is like my parents' generation.
Yeah, yeah, definitely.
So much stuff. Again.
So much.
Like, here's the pasta salads to put on your leafy greens and tuna salad and chicken salad. And you know, I felt like a kid at experimenting. Like, just put it all in there and see what happens. Anyway, the first Salad Works opened in 1986. Nowadays, they have 100 stores in 15 states.
And this was an early example of a fast casual restaurant chain featuring salads as entrees, along with sandwiches and soups. As fast casual concepts gained in popularity through the 90s, they would set the stage for the first salad-only fast casual restaurant, Chopped, spelled with a PT on the end there.
Mm-hmm.
In New York City's Union Square, that was the first location, and that was in 2001. In 2007, the aforementioned chain Sweetgreen out of D.C. landed on a new marketing strategy for this type of restaurant, making the salad bowl into a lifestyle, like a healthy, cool lifestyle.
Yeah.
They launched an annual music festival called Sweet Life and started collaborating with famous chefs and artists on featured dishes. For example, Kendrick Lamar's Beets Don't Kale My Vibe salad.
Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They have marketing teams around the country that organize like fitness classes and farmers market outings to associate the brand with this very Instagrammable lifestyle.
Interesting times we live in.
Oh, I know. Yeah, these days there is a whole host of salad chains. Tender Greens, Green Leaf, Just Salad, Honey Grow, Salada, which I love. It's an ancient Roman word for anyway.
Yeah.
And all of these have minor tweaks on the concept to set themselves apart from having a chef in every individual restaurant setting the menu to using touch screens for ordering to using produce grown on company-owned farms. But these are mostly a phenomenon in metro areas. They're not really expanding into non-urban markets yet.
Mm.
And then around 2014, a brand called Farmer's Fridge started putting up vending machines that they stock with fresh salads in plastic jars every morning.
Oh.
Yeah, like a cupcake, yeah. Cupcake machine, but, you know.
But salad.
But salad.
Huh. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. And I guess now a lot of, well, there are restaurants that do where you can get the bowl, like say Chipotle or something. You can get a salad bowl and put your stuff in there instead of getting
a burrito or whatever. Yeah, sure.
That's a whole trend too.
It is.
The salad.
It's a wild salad time that we are living in.
It is. And I will say on our trips, like you mentioned the one you had in Oahu, the trips we've gone on through this show, I feel like we've always had a really good salad.
Oh, and those things like save my life on those trips because we're eating so much and we're eating so much very rich food.
Yeah.
And I remember on our very first trip, we were driving back from Kentucky and we stopped in Chattanooga at this very nice, maybe French-ish themed restaurant. And all three of us were just like, vegetables, I need a vegetable. Like, please give me a salad.
Yes.
I've eaten nothing but like derby pie.
Just straight derby pie.
For the past like 3 days, please, a salad.
Maybe we should have ordered something other than derby pie. Oh, no, just kidding. But yeah, I feel like I've had a lot of really good. Because I like salads, but, I generally know what to expect. But I feel like I've had some creative ones.
Really great ones.
Yeah.
One at Piggy Smalls had, like, strips of preserved lemon in it. I keep going on about that preserved lemon in it, but, oh, it was so nice.
We had that, like, herb salad in New Orleans.
Oh, right.
Oh, man, that was good. Yeah. Oh, geez. Okay. Well, I think that's about what we have to say on salads for today.
It is. And we have some listener mail for you. But first, we've got one more quick break for a word from our sponsor.
And we're back. Thank you, sponsor.
Yes, thank you.
And we're back with
listener mail.
I think salad fingers kind of sounded like that.
Oh, gosh.
You're welcome. You're welcome. Just when you thought you'd gotten it out of your head, I bring it back. Emily wrote, first off, thank you for releasing the pizza episode on my birthday. Happy birthday.
Yeah, happy birthday.
She was one of the first people that ever wrote us, so thank you. We appreciate it. There is only one food I like more than pizza, and that's pasta, which is in the same wheelhouse for sure. I have been waiting for the right episode to send you this story, and pizza finally provided it.
Ah.
My university has a week-long break once a semester for any undergrad students, and for the first weekend of the fall 2018 break, it happened to be when my cousin was getting married. My aunt's side of the family, including the cousin who got married, lives in Greece, so my dad and I went on a week-long vacation to Greece for the wedding. Family time and some touristy stuff, too. I was excitedly talking about my upcoming trip the week before the break with my friend from one of my classes because she had been to Greece just a few years before, while it had been 10 years for me. She was telling me about how her tour guide had taken them to this Italian restaurant in a small tourist town, touting it as the best Italian food outside of Italy he had ever had. She agreed it was the best she had ever had, but what was truly memorable was the wall-sized picture of George Clooney, which was proudly hanging in the women's bathroom. I asked her where the restaurant was and what it was called, but she had forgotten. Fast forward to a week later, my dad, aunt, and uncle and I were driving through the mountains. We'd been in the car for a while and were quite hungry, and I desperately had to use a washroom. So we stopped at a tourist town, and my uncle dropped me off at a restaurant, telling me to ask to use their washroom, then to come back so we can take our time deciding a restaurant. So I went in, and to my amazement and amusement, hanging in the women's room was a wall-sized portrait of George Clooney. My uncle was explaining it to my dad that it's a bad idea to eat at the first place you see, and it's best to look around first. Then I come running out excitedly explaining what had happened, so my uncle ate his worries before he went to have some delicious Italian food. If you would like to visit George, the restaurant is called Scuola, S-C-U-O-L-A, and it is located in Nafpilo, Greece. Attached is a photo of me and George. The portrait is quite a sight to behold, I must say. It's huge. He's looking refined as ever.
Sure.
Definitely worth a stop, I'd say.
Yes. Dronia wrote, my comment on sweet potatoes is that in Japan, during the colder months when leaves begin to fall and inundate lawns in more countryside villages, people will wrap sweet potatoes, this kind with the dark skin and golden flesh, and toss them into leaf piles. After they're done raking their leaves, they will burn the leaves, with the wrapped potatoes still inside. This, of course, cooks as well as smokes your potato. When fall rolls around and we do this as well, it makes raking much more enjoyable when you know a tasty treat is waiting for you in the end. The smokiness mixed with the sweet flesh is something quite special and unique. I highly recommend giving it a shot. I also saw in Tokyo a Don Quixote, like a variety shop, that had roasted sweet potatoes at the end of the checkout counter in a warmer display that you could walk and eat. I also have a unique ice cream flavor that we carry at the Kroger grocery store here in Arkansas that is the store private select brand, which is wildberry, lavender, and mascarpone cheese. It is absolutely delightful.
Ooh. That sounds delightful.
That does sound delightful.
We're working on a lavender episode right now, and I am in a lavender state of mind.
Yeah.
But also, I love that you can get the sweet potatoes at the end of the checkout counter.
Yes.
Like instead of hot dogs or something.
Right.
Sweet potatoes.
Oh.
Fills my heart with joy.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks to both of them for writing to us. If you would like to write to us, you can. Our email is hello@saverpod.com.
We're also on social media. You can find us on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter @SaverPod. We do hope to hear from you. Saver is a production of iHeartRadio and Stuff Media. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, you can visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows. Thank you, as always, to our super producers, Dylan Fagan and Andrew Howard. Thank you to you for listening, and we hope that lots more good things are coming your way.